HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 194, recorded live Friday, January 8th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Warren Sand and his son Carter about their new book, Hello World.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I've got on the phone from California Warren and Carter Sand. They are the authors of Hello World, Computer Programming for Kids and Other Beginners. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Yeah.
So, Warren, you're an engineer, but Carter, as an author, you're kind of in a unique situation. How old are you, sir?
I'm 10 years old.
You're 10. And when did you start writing this book?
I started writing this book when I was 6 years old.
So you've been working on this book for basically 40% of your life. So you've always been writing a book, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess I could say that.
And did you actually write stuff? Did you sit down and write programs, and did your dad test things on you? Or what was the relationship? How did you guys work together on this book?
Well, I wrote a lot of things in the book, and my dad also wrote a lot of things. The primary things that I wrote were Hangman and the Virtual Pet programs in the book, which my dad did help me with a little bit. Mm-hmm. And also, anytime you see a little cartoon of me with the speech bubble, I also wrote that.
Oh, okay. Now, this is an interesting book. I read this book the last couple of days, and because it's called Hello World, and it's got a, you know, kind of a cartoon picture of you and your dad, I thought that it would be, and forgive me for phrasing it this way, but I thought it would be kind of dumbed down. You know, I thought that you were going to make it really, really, really almost too basic, but I found it to be really enjoyable to read. I didn't feel that you were, pulling any punches. I kind of assumed that you were maybe in your teens. What ages do you think that kids could read a book like this? Because it's simple, but it's complicated at the same time.
I think we really tried not to dumb it down so it could be used by beginners, but also if people wanted to go deeper, that they could. And really also for, you know, beginner adults, so it wouldn't seem like it was just a kid's book. The age question is one that we've had quite a few times, and it's kind of hard to answer. Like, some kids could be, 6 or 8 years old, really, and get a start on it. As long as they can read well and they have a really basic knowledge of computers, like how to operate the computer and save files and things like that. And some kids would, be a little bit older when they're ready for it. It really just depends on the kid. It all goes to, probably, I would say, motivation is one of the key factors. If you're motivated to learn programming, then you can use this book, I think.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Sometimes I feel like beginner programmer books spend a lot of time trying to convince the reader to be interested. And it definitely seemed like the way that you structured this was that you assume that the people are already pretty interested in getting involved, and you're enabling them rather than trying to convince them of why being a programmer would be a good thing.
That's right, yeah. There's a little bit of that at the start. I mean, I do think that learning programming is a very valuable and good thing to do, even if you're not going to be a programmer when you grow up, like if you're going to be in some other career, because just a little bit of programming knowledge, even the basics, can help you no matter what kind of career you go into, I think.
Now, that's a really interesting point, because I had asked you just before if you were a programmer, and you said you're an engineer, but so you probably use programming in your job, but you're not a professional coder. Is that true?
That's right. Yes, that's right.
And then, so do you find yourself writing code occasionally to solve the problems that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've done a little bit of embedded C programming. I've done some scripting to automate things that I do in my job. So I do write code from time to time.
Do you think that everyone should learn coding? I mean, I've always said that, some point in your life, you're going to be working somewhere and you'll need to write an Excel macro. And if you had a programming class early in your life, that macro that you write in Microsoft Excel will be so much easier if your brain is tuned to those kinds of constructs.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, there's so many people who, again, aren't in programming work, whether it's in engineering or finance or whatever the job may be, that even just a little bit of basic programming, like you said, to do an Excel macro or a little script to automate some task that they need to do every day, just that basic programming knowledge is really valuable.
Mm-hmm. Now that this book is done, Carter, do you find yourself writing programs all the time to solve problems for school, or do you mostly write games?
Well, I'd say that I program like every once in a while, probably once a week. Mm-hmm. For example, earlier this school year, I needed to learn my math facts, which I was getting a little rusty on. So I wrote just a very simple program to test me on my math facts and see how well I did.
That's a pretty cool thing. So you wrote a program to test yourself on math?
Yes, I did.
And this is something that you came up with on your own?
Yes, it was something that I came up with on my own.
Hmm. Now, amongst the 10-year-old set, and you have to forgive me, I haven't been 10 for a very long time. Amongst people who are 10, do you think there are a lot of programmers?
Well, that's kind of hard to say because, like, most 10-year-olds that I know aren't really programmers, but there probably might be.
Now, when you started learning about programming, did you think you would maybe, like, write games for, like, a Nintendo? I suppose 10-year-olds play handheld games.
Actually, I think lots of 10-year-olds would want to do that, but the problem with that is, like, video games that are out today, like Mario and Zelda and all those other games, those are, like, some of the most complicated pieces of programming around. So mm-hmm. that wouldn't really be something that you would tackle when you were first being in programming like I am.
But you did write a game or two for this book, which I thought was pretty cool. What games did you write?
The main games that I wrote, I think, were The Hangman and The Virtual Pet. Those were kind of my two main games. I also wrote one of the more basic games. It was called Pi Pong. And you have a little paddle which you control with your mouse, and you have to get a ball to, like, bounce off the top of the screen, and, like, if the ball goes past your paddle, then you lose a life.
Hmm. And what was the hardest part about writing a game like that?
The hardest part, I think, was finding all of the little tiny bugs that I made. Like, that mm-hmm. is always going to be the hardest part of programming for me, is the debugging. You really have to think outside the box for that.
Mm-hmm. And you said the tiny bugs. Are the tiny bugs harder to find than the big bugs?
Well, I think they are because, like, big bugs, Python gives you an error and it tells you exactly where the bug is. But little bugs, let's say, like, the ball kind of floated past the top of the screen instead of bouncing off, those would be harder to find because Python wouldn't alert you and it wouldn't tell you where it was.
Ah.
So you'd have to, like, search all of the code by yourself.
Sometimes I think that the difference between those kinds of the big bugs and the little bugs is kind of like when you're writing a report, and sometimes Microsoft Word will tell you that you misspelled something, and sometimes it won't, but it's still wrong. So, like, if you spell something wrong, it'll put a little squiggly under it, and then you know that that's wrong. But sometimes you just have poor grammar or you've written something wrong, and that's like a little bug that you have to really hunt for and think about. Do you think so?
Yes, I do think so.
And that's one of the things, actually, one of the reasons I think learning programming is valuable, because it teaches you to problem solve and to find those harder to find bugs in order to get things working. I think that's one of the reasons that, again, even if you're not going to be a programmer, learning programming is kind of like learning how to learn or learning how to think or learning how to problem solve. So I think that's why it's really valuable.
Really? Do you think that changed the way that that Carter's brain kind of was wired when you started thinking about moving from, what is he now, fourth grade, from first grade?
I'm not sure. I think people who are into computer programming and computers and that sort of thing, maybe they are, they tend to think that way already. They tend to be that problem-solving type of person who can look at those hard problems and find the answers more easily than the average person can. But I think mm-hmm. probably that doing a lot of programming did, you know, help in that direction as well.
Because I'm interested in what the learning about programming does to a child's brain. Basically, I'm trying to think about nature versus nurture. Because you know that amongst programmers and engineer types, there's always the joke that you can spot a nerd. And when I was a kid, being a nerd wasn't cool. But I suppose now in the time of Carter, being a nerd is pretty cool. If you know about Twitter and you know about Facebook, that's not being a nerd at all. That's just being connected. And in here, you've done a little experiment where you've started with a kindergartner or first grader and been writing a book for his on programming for his entire career. Do you think that Carter would think differently if you'd never written the book?
I think so, because I think if we hadn't written the book, he wouldn't be doing as much programming. He wouldn't be on the computer as much. He wouldn't be in that thinking, problem-solving, debugging mode nearly as much. And so, yeah, I think it has affected probably the way he thinks and the way he approaches things.
What do you think about that, Carter? Do you think that your brain works differently because you worked on this book?
I don't actually know, but I do know that I am pretty good at problem solving, and I'm not sure if that was a result of the book or something that made me like programming in the first place.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
One of the things, too, with us is that I think with Carter, when he showed an interest in computers when he was very young, like 3 or 4 years old, you know, mm-hmm. We said, go ahead, go for it. We didn't wait and say, oh, he's too young for computers, he's too young to do that. We just let him go with it, and that was one of the main differences with Carter.
Was it hard to get kids interested in the text aspect of things? Don't you think that, you know, in the examples you use Python and the IDLE IDE, it's not exactly thrilling stuff typing at the command line. But, I mean, that's how I learned to program. I just wonder if kids these days want to know how to make a little man walk around on the screen immediately, and they're not interested in the text part of things.
Well, I was worried about that, too. But actually, it's funny, when you actually see kids going through that and doing the first programs that are all text-based, of course, because the graphics takes a much higher level of programming before you get to the point where you can make graphics on the screen. Even just the very basic stuff, just making the computer do something and do what you want it to do, kids love it. And they, even if it's a simple text-based program, they really get into it and they really enjoy it.
Now you picked Python to start out with. Why did you pick Python?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is that I had been using Python at work, and I really enjoyed it as a language. I found it very easy to use. I found it had a nice, clear syntax. And I kind of thought as I was using it, this would be a good language for teaching programming. Again, because, you know, it has a very nice, clear syntax, and also because it's an interpreted language, so you can get, you know, immediate feedback. You can try little one-liners and see what happens. A couple of attributes make Python really good for teaching, I think.
And at what point did you move from text to graphics?
For myself, I very soon after I started using Python, I mean, one of the first things I wanted to use it for was a graphical application. So I learned the very basic Python stuff first, and then I quickly moved into using a Python module that allowed you to do some graphic stuff, which we do actually cover in the book as well. It's called Python Cart. It's a way to build simple GUIs. But you can definitely start off and get the basics in the text mode and then add the graphics later.
Mm-hmm.
The other nice thing about Python, of course, is that it's free, and mm-hmm. also it's available for, you know, all the platforms, Linux, Mac, and Windows. So all the odd, like in schools, you find a lot of computer labs still use a lot of Macs, or some of them are starting to use Linux boxes now, as well as all the Windows machines that are out there. So having a language that's really truly cross-platform is also nice.
Hey, everybody, this is Scott coming at you from another place and time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work. And you know, writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests thanks to Telerik with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit, not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight, all shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot. When you had this idea, had Carter already expressed interest in working on computers?
Oh, for sure. Like, he was interested in the computer from the time he could read, basically, which was about 3 years old. And so, I mean, the first things we did is he just wanted to play on the computer. So we would just start up, you know, Word and let him type things and draw pictures using the drawing tools and that sort of thing. And before too long, he decided he wanted to do a little bit more with it. And he started to do a little bit of HTML, mm-hmm. Make some simple web pages. By the time he was 5, he really kind of wanted to do, you know, programming stuff. And he started asking about, can we make a game or can we make a program? And that's when he really got rolling on thinking about, well, what resources are out there to help teach him programming. And when I started looking around, I didn't really find any books that I found that were suitable or really good for teaching kids or beginners programming. And that's sort of where the idea came from for writing this book.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought about any web programming? Most of the programming in this book was kind of graphical user interfaces and kind of the fundamentals. Have you worked up to creating web pages with Python?
We haven't. No, we don't really cover any web programming in the book.
Have you done that since?
Not yet. No, maybe that'll be the next book, but we haven't really started on that yet.
When you started writing this book, did you already have a publisher? I'm just kind
we
of curious
actually,
about the process
no.
because you're not a programmer and this is your first book.
Yeah. So no, we didn't have a publisher at all when we first started it. We just had some ideas. We started. You know, it was just a project that we were doing, Carter and I together, to have something to work on together and to help Carter learn programming. And we worked on it that way for probably about a year and a half. We had, you know, outlines for all the chapters. We had a fair number of chapters written. Probably a couple hundred pages of material was done, all our example programs and everything. And at that point, we kind of didn't know what we were going to do with it. Should we try and self-publish it, or should we try and find a publisher for it? It wasn't really clear what we would do, or just do nothing, just, you know, let it be its own little private project. So at that point, I did have an idea to start sending out proposals for this book to publishers just to see if there was any interest. And as I was just starting to do that, I saw a message in a Python news group that said, hey, if you are a Python author or know someone who's an author of a beginner's book for Python, let me know because I know a publisher who's looking to do a book like that. And so I saw this message and replied to it, and the person put me in touch with someone at Manning Publications. And literally, like before I knew it, I was signed up with a publishing contract.
Wow. Is it supposed to be that easy? That seems.
I don't think it's supposed to be that easy. From what I've heard, that's the exception, not the rule. It just was, you know, sort of preparation meeting opportunity. We had this thing that was sort of half finished or more than half finished, and we had a publisher who was looking to do that kind of book. And I was very fortunate that Michael Stevens at Manning was very excited about this kind of project. It's something he'd been wanting to do for a while. And so just the timing worked out perfectly.
Wow. Now, you've been working on this for 4 years. And
From the time we started till the time that we signed up with Manning was about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. Uh-huh. And then after that, it was about another year and a half or so by the time the book was actually released and published. So a total of three and a half years from, you know, inception to, you know, hitting the bookshelves.
Hmm. I've got a 2-year-old and I've got a 4-year-old, and my wife and I always joke about the time when the 4-year-old will become, like, you know, really useful as opposed to the I'm trying to be useful part of, you know, growing up. You know, right now we'll go shopping and he'll really, really want to be useful, but he'll inevitably, you know, drop something or clean up on aisle 2. You got to experience your son going from, you know, little, you know, small person to larger, much more useful person. Did he get more and more involved in the book the older that he got?
Well, he was pretty involved right from the start. Like, he was
really,
you know, very keen, and he was helping with, you know, ideas. We worked on all the ideas together, the what should be in the book, how should it be written, how can we make it easy for kids to understand and make it interesting. So mm-hmm. I think that it didn't really ramp up from the start. It started at a very high level and continued that way all the way through, his involvement.
Really? Wow.
I think, quite honestly, it never would have got finished, this book, if Carter hadn't been involved. It would just have been me. If I, you know, hadn't had kids or whatever and I just got an idea to write this book, I probably wouldn't have had the initiative to get it finished, I don't think. Without Carter's excitement and interest and pushing it along and saying, Daddy, let's work on the book instead of reading stories tonight and things like that, I don't think it would have got finished.
Wow, that's really cool. Because, you know, when I saw that that the book was written by a father and son, one always wonders how involved really was the son. And like Carter was listing out all the different things, different parts of the books that he worked on, it sounded like it really was a collaborative thing.
Absolutely. Like, you can definitely see Carter's, you know, voice and input in the book in many, many places.
Mm-hmm. Carter, as you get into the book, you know, around chapter 14, 15, 16, things start getting pretty complicated. Towards chapter 17, you've got sprites and collision detection and things like that. What part of the book did you think was the hardest?
Well, I don't know. It was all kind of pretty hard.
Really?
Writing this book.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole book from your first print Hello World to sprites and collision detection, it was all kind of a challenge to make it simple and like easy to understand and something that people would like. So I don't really think that there was any hardest part of the book, from my point of view.
So the whole process was hard?
Yes, it was.
Was it the book writing or the programming that was harder?
I would probably say the book writing, because when you're writing for a computer, like, you know exactly what the computer wants. But we didn't really know exactly what the, people who were going to read our book wanted, so we had to try harder to make something that people would like.
And when you were writing this, were you thinking about kids your age, or who were you thinking about when you could envision who was writing the book?
Well, generally I was thinking kids, but as we got towards the middle and the end of the book, mm-hmm. I just kind of started thinking about it as beginners in general, not just kids.
So you thought about, like, adults. Like, I could start with your book and start learning programming, no problem.
Yes, you probably could.
Hmm. Now, what can you tell me about Python Card, Carter?
Well, Python Card is a more or less simple GUI creation module for Python. And usually when I start a Python Card program, I start with the resource editor, which is a tool in Python Card that lets you just kind of start with the window and drop in buttons and text fields and labels and lots of other things, and then I write the code for it.
So the resource describes what's going on in the form, and then the code is somewhere else in another file?
Yeah, the resource describes exactly what the window looks like and what's there and where it is. And then the code is in another file, and it's just kind of the underlying code that handles all the events.
Okay, so what's an event?
An event, on a computer at least, is when, like, somebody clicks a button or just something that happens in the program. It could be, like, somebody moved the mouse, or somebody closed the window, or somebody typed something into the text field.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have, say, somebody clicks on a button, you usually have an event handler, which handles the event and does whatever the button does. So if you clicked on a button that said submit, say, on a form, the event handler would probably send the contents of the form to somewhere.
You sound like you've got a pretty good handle on all this. You didn't find this difficult at all. when you started getting into object orientation, did you write your applications differently? Somewhere around chapter 14, you start introducing objects. Were you writing programs without objects earlier, and then you started using objects later?
Well, yes. Earlier, I was just writing, I'd say, kind of simpler code, but when I got into objects, instead of having a bunch of, like, a group of variables hanging around in my program, I would have, like, an object to put that in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you get into the later chapters where you're looking at Pygame and Python Card and some of the other modules that we use for graphics and sound, they use Python's object-oriented nature in the way that they're written. So you are really sort of forced to write more object-oriented code because that's the way to interface with those modules.
Okay, so you introduced object orientation because of the use of objects within libraries, not necessarily
because... Right, exactly. So if people are going to start using those libraries and they see this dot notation and they see objects being used, they sort of need to know how that works in the background, what's really going on.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, how do you introduce that concept of object orientation? I remember when I first got my taste of programming, someone tried to teach me C++ first, and not just real basics. And they said, "All right, well, the first thing you need to know is about an object." And I kind of felt like a regular procedural small application would have been a better place for me to start, because object orientation was very difficult as an introduction. And in here, you've chosen to put that pretty far into the book, chapter 14.
Exactly, yeah. Because I agree. I think that starting with object-oriented type programming isn't the way to go. I think starting with simpler procedural-oriented code is a good way to get an introduction to all the basic things like variables and looping and decisions and so on, the if statements. And then once you get the basic figuring out how program flows and those basic constructs, then you can introduce other things like objects and then graphics and sound and the other things.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you tested this on other kids that aren't Carter? How are other people finding the book? Maybe teachers or schools?
Yeah, we did actually. In the review process of writing the book, this is when after we got engaged with Manning and we started finishing off the book, there was quite an extensive review process which included lots of kids and teachers and other educators. So it was quite an extensive process, and we got really good feedback from kids of ages from Carter's age on up to, there were some high school kids, some college students, teachers, and, right the whole age range. And we got good feedback from all those people.
Really? And so college students as well. And what about adults? What about fresh adults? Because I'm thinking about letting my wife read this book.
It's funny. There's actually been several comments. If you look at some of the reviews on Amazon and so on that we've gotten in other places, there's people who said, I reviewed this book and it looks like it'd be really good for beginners. And my non-programmer wife tried it and she even is interested in it. We've got comments like that. We've got comments from people who are seniors who haven't done programming for 30 years and want to get back into it and have found this book is a really good way to get restarted in programming.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty cool. That makes me feel better. So I shouldn't let the four kids part of the title slow me down.
No, and that's actually why we put that's why we added the and other beginners in the title as well, because it isn't just for kids. And as you noted at the start, it doesn't really, talk down to the audience. So it's really good for all ages.
Do you think that programming should be something that everyone should learn in school? And at what age should they all start?
That's a tough one. I think that programming is a very useful thing for all kids to learn in school. But as we were talking about before, motivation is such an important factor. So if you have kids in school who aren't interested at all in learning programming, I'm not sure if forcing them to learn programming is the right thing to do. I'm a little bit on the fence on that one. While I think it would be really valuable if all kids could learn some programming, if they don't have the motivation, it might be the kind of subject where some kids just aren't going to be interested and just aren't going to learn anything. So that's a tough one.
But we force them to learn English and we force them to learn math.
Yeah, that's
why,
true.
Why do we find those subjects appropriately forcible but not programming?
Maybe it's just history because, math's been around for thousands of years and programming hasn't been, right?
Touche. Yeah, the motivation thing is interesting. The nature versus nurture discussion is very complex. I wonder, I was a professor at our state university for a while, and there were a number of times where I had to pull people aside and figure out how to say, it's just as difficult to say it now as it was to those people, that maybe programming isn't really what you need to be doing, I mean, you don't want to discourage a student ever, but at the same time, some people just have a knack for it. And it's interesting when you say or threaten to say something like that to a person about an intellectual thing that they want to accomplish, that's not okay. But if someone's physically not able to do something, that's kind of okay. Like, I'm not a very good long jumper, so I don't think anyone would be offended if a coach came over and said, Scott, maybe the long jump's really not what you need to be doing. And I would go, the stats don't lie. I'm not a long jumper. And I would go on and I'd pick another sport. But to go to someone and say maybe programming or whatever, some intellectual pursuit that they're interested in is not their thing. Because for every time you do that, there's a person who rose up and accomplished something great anyway, even though they're not wired that way.
The other thing too is, how do you know whether it's not your thing or not until you try it? How do you know
exactly
if it's going to be your thing or not? So probably, some exposure to programming at some point, and I would say probably the middle school age range is a good thing to have.
Yeah. And how far into it do you go before you realize it's not your thing? I didn't realize math wasn't my thing until calculus.
Right.
I mean, basic math, you know, everything up to, but not including calculus, I totally rock. And then my calculus teacher pulled me aside and said, you know, really, you need to just try to get a C in this class. And if you can pull that off, you should be happy with that.
Yeah. I actually had the same experience, but then I found a really good calculus teacher, and then I went to the next level, of course, because I needed calculus for my engineering education. So sometimes it depends on a lot of other factors, too, the teacher you have, the course material that you have, and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, and that may actually bring the discussion full circle, because perhaps all it is the right book or the right teacher, and then anyone can learn programming.
Exactly. Well, that's what we hope, right? I mean, I think that this book is written somewhat like a textbook. I mean, it's really meant for home use, but I think it could have application in schools as well. I could see this book or some slight derivative on this book being used as a textbook in like a middle school computer class.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, the book can be is Hello World, Computer Programming for Kids and Other Beginners, and you can get it at manning.com, and you guys set up a 40% off code for us.
That's right.
It's H-A-N-S-E-L-M, like Hanselman, except Hanselm 40. I'll put that up on the website, and that is going to be good until the end of January if folks want to buy that book at a 40% discount, and they can check it out, I assume, in bookstores everywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Warren and Carter. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.